Hello everybody, welcome to another episode of Celebrating Cinema, an interview episode. My name is Hugo Emmerza, I'm one of the hosts, and I'm joined here today by Russian filmmaker Marusia Sirochkovskaya, the director of How to Save a Dead Friend, a film that will be playing in the Dutch cinemas starting from the 7th of September.
В 2005 году мне было 16, и я была уверена, что это последний год моей жизни.
Хочешь попробовать?
Умею. Но потом на Гранж-форуме я встретила Кими.
Кирилл, скажите, эти съемки трудно вам дались?
Marusia, very happy that you're here. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure.
This is a documentary film that you made and that has been following you maybe for a very long time in your life. It's kind of like a cine memoir, I would say, of your life in Russia, in Moscow, but also the life that you have shared with a close friend, partner, husband, Kimi, who we see very intimately in the film and ultimately also have to accept that he's no longer with us. It's a very, very personal film. And actually the first thing that I was kind of wondering is maybe what the process is like for you to take such an incredibly personal story and then find the right way to actually deliver the story through film as well, because I can imagine that that must have been a very strange journey as well.
Yeah, it was. But also there were so many things that I wasn't able to talk about before, like my depression and drug use and everything that me and Kimi went through. So it felt like I need to tell the story to be able to go on, because it was eating me from the inside. Yeah, it was a long journey and very difficult editing process, if you can imagine. Partly also because it was during COVID and we had to edit online with my editor who was in a different country. But in the end, it felt so good to be able to share the story with everybody.
And can you, before we start talking about the editing, because I definitely want to talk about that, can you talk a little bit about maybe why you picked up the camera in the first place and recorded so many of these moments of your own personal life, but also of your shared life with Kimi? Because I'm always amazed by that. I'm not a filmmaker, so I rarely think about, even when I'm, you know, on a beautiful place, I even forget to take a photo to record things of my life. And in some ways, you've given yourself a huge gift by recording all of this material. And it seems to be loads and loads of it across many, many years.
Well, the reason why I was filming so much is because I was a very depressed teenager who didn't know that, you know, I was depressed and I didn't know how to ask for help, how to communicate with the world. So camera helped me to make sense of everything that was happening to me. And it was also shielding me from reality a little bit. I felt safer with it. So this is why I had so much footage in the first place.
And did you already, in the moment of, you know, creating footage when you were way younger, because we follow you, we basically see you grow up through the film as well. Were you already thinking in some weird ways this at some point might be a film, or was the footage just enough first as the footage?
No, not really. I mean, maybe later I thought that, you know, me and Kimi were, you know, joking around that we're making a film about our life, but without any particular concept. It just, I had so much footage that sometimes we're like fantasizing about making something out of it without any particular idea.
And you said you're making a film, or jokingly thinking that you're making a film about your life and Kimi's life. But in a strange way, or maybe in a fitting way, I think you have captured a very specific zeitgeist feeling of what maybe an entire generation was going through in Russia. Also maybe a kind of process that is very hard to put into the right words, because it's such an intimate and lived experience. Because in the film you also explained that, you know, you're part of the depressed federation, and that there's an entire generation that's kind of maybe lost in Putin's Russia. How do you see maybe your story and Kimi's story as metaphor almost for a story in Russia at large?
Well, I'll say that I wanted to give this feeling how it was to grow up during this time and this place. And I didn't really think of us as, you know, like figureheads of mm-hmm. our generation. I mean, a lot of things that happened in Russia at this time had some influence on us directly or indirectly. So it was important for me to try to show it and to give this feeling.
Yeah, because I'm just kind of really interested in maybe also that through the film you track such a specific kind of sub-scenes within the culture as well. Like, for instance, you and Kimi meet on a grunge forum. Many of these kind of places back in the days maybe seemed much more innocent and wholesome and kind of more individual and free. So you kind of see this trajectory maybe also where the internet was a safer and nicer place to meet people and where you could find like-minded people more easily. You can kind of see this technological change throughout the film as well. And I was wondering how you kind of reflect on that, because I feel like it doesn't really work that way anymore, the way that people meet maybe, the way that people exchange or are part of a culture. Things have changed maybe a little bit there.
I think it just they use, as if I'm not using internet, it's just different platforms now. Mm-hmm. People don't use forums as much really, yeah. But in Russia, especially in Russia, internet is much more controlled by the government now.
Yeah.
And you can put to prison for writing something about the war. Mm-hmm. So it's, the police is putting more attention to what people do in the internet. And back then it was, you could find everything in the internet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now you need to use a VPN to go to Instagram or Facebook from Russia, I mean.
And it's like, you know, I'm setting this film up and I'm explaining some things and some of them sound very, you know, grim, and some of the outlook that you show on life as a young person in Russia is quite bleak. But at the other end, what I really, really like about the film and really struck me is its kind of joie de vivre, its kind of rebellious spirit, its good-heartedness, and this kind of like idea that joy and love maybe triumphs a lot of these things. And how was that like for you, maybe to balance some of these emotional extremes that we see in How to Save a Dead Friend?
Well, when we were editing, we didn't want our viewers to, you know, to feel completely destroyed and devastated by, you know, all the sad things that are happening, because there was also a lot of fun moments in mm-hmm. our lives and a lot of humor and crazy stuff, and it wasn't just misery and depression. So, we try to balance things with things and music and fun and happy experiences. And in the end, it's a story about us growing up and about us falling in love and about, you know, a love that stays no matter what.
Yeah, the film is, I think, a kind of undying testament to that, because the images of him will always remain, and it kind of feels like this beautiful ode maybe to a huge chapter of your life or something.
Yeah, well, my original idea was to make all the people who didn't have chance to meet Kimi while he was alive to, mm-hmm. you know, to make them meet him,
mm-hmm.
to know him, how I knew him, the person who I loved very much despite his, you know, with all his strengths and flaws. So look at him with my eyes.
And then you were talking a little bit about the editing, but what was it like then maybe for the first time to really go through all that footage? That, because footage often, just like a lot of things that people collect in their lives, you know, you collect it and then often it sits on the shelf or on a SD card or on a hard drive, and then you have to suddenly go through all of it to make a film. What was it like to go back into that archive?
It was bittersweet. Because as if I was, you know, postponing saying final goodbyes to Kimi and remembering all the moments we spent together. And a lot of footage I haven't rewatched for many years. So it was really interesting experience, because I remember like some things I remembered differently, and then I rewatched it and it was not how I remembered it.
So that's kind of interesting. But then, you know, you have the opportunity then to also fit it into a narrative, right? And because you have all these little snapshots, but together they compose this bigger story. Was it hard finding the right entry point to do the story on her, or was that a very intuitive process?
It was difficult. We didn't know where to start when we started, because we had all the different materials shot on different cameras, and all the formats. We had videos, photos, audios. We had, like the sonification application. Yeah. Using music, and we had to make it work. We had to tell the story that, you know, happened over decades without oversimplifying it, but we had to tell it in less than 2 hours, preferably. So, yeah, it was a long editing process. It took us 6 months. We took breaks, of course. Yeah. It was a lot of work and a lot of experiments, and we tried different things with how time goes, where do we end, where do we start, how much of me as a character there is,
yeah,
how much of other people there is, all these different things.
Yeah, I was very much wondering about that as well. Like, I can assume that when you make a film that's so close to yourself, it's very hard how to balance how much the film should be about you or from your point of view or a different point of view. So what kind of considerations did you ultimately make in that?
It was very hard to think of myself as a character, because I'm usually not a character.
Yeah, you're the creator. Yeah.
I'm behind the camera. Yes. And I cannot say that it was an easy decision for me to be in, like, in front, to be a character. But I think it helped me a lot to in the grieving process, to think of myself as a character, to have this distance, to kind of look at our story from a perspective. It was very helpful.
Yeah, I can imagine. There's like a couple of shots that really struck with me, and I think that has to do with this sonification application as well, but these moments where you have photos of Kimi and you can kind of touch them and it converts the image and it distorts the image, and it kind of really made me feel about, like, think about this idea how, you know, images, they become so close and familiar, but at the other hand, they can never replace the actual physical touch. There's this kind of absence while also this presence. It's this very complex dynamic. And I thought that you captured that part of, like, grief and loss very well. But I was wondering what the idea behind those moments were, because they were very evocative and touching to me.
Yeah, the idea was that I really wanted the images of Kimi to become music. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, okay, it sounds like I need a sonification program or application, something. So I started to research online what's out there, and I found this application that was only for still images, called Voces. So I contacted the developer and I said, hey, I really like your app. Can I ask you for a code? I want to make it for my film, for I just wanted to have this function of, you know, to use it for video. And he said, no, I don't want to give you a code, but I want to work with you on this project. So he created this, it's kind of a musical instrument.
Yeah.
When I'm touching the screen, I'm producing sounds depending on, like, what I'm touching.
Yeah.
Because it analyzes black and white and the images, and it turns into the sounds. So I thought of it, it's like this poetic, you know, poetic way. I'm touching images of Kimi and it turns into music. So I liked it a lot. And also, like you said, there's this touching the screen with images of someone who's gone. For me, it's also about cinema in general, you know, touching from a distance.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this film very perfectly captures this strange paradox of cinema or moving arts that, you know, it literally moves you, but also you are kind of immobile and stuck, and it's very touching, but it's also this abstract thing of pixels or projected light and shadow. And this in-betweenness, I think that the film in some strange way really speaks to that sensation of being in between, of being close and being far away. And yeah, I don't know. I thought that was something that also made me think about the role of cinema, maybe.
Yeah, for me, it's like I'm saying in the film, that's the, like, the afterlife that we get, you know, because we pass away and we have all these photos, we have this social media profiles, all this digital remains of us. So that's our afterlife.
Mm-hmm. So in a kind of weird but maybe also beautiful way, do you see this film as kind of a very beautiful tomb maybe for Kimi, or kind of
Yeah, I would like to think of it as, you know, something I was trying to do to save a memory of him, to other people to share with me. And
with our podcast, it's called Celebrating Cinema, and every guest that we have, we always try to find out a little bit about why they ended up making or being so obsessed with film and cinema in the first place. And I was wondering if you have any, like, maybe strong formative memories that you want to share of seeing film for the first time, or being in love with a movie for the first time, or kind of having that strong impression.
I remember my first really strong film impression was a film called Nowhere by Greg Araki. I watched it when I was, I think, 15 or something like that. And man, it's like, I've never seen anything like that before. And
after, probably.
yes. And I fell in love with that. And I'm like, I want to be a filmmaker. And I still like this film very much. Yeah.
It's an incredible film, and I'm like kind of wondering if some of those maybe inspirations of Araki, who's like aesthetically and stylistically one of the most interesting, you know, filmmakers out there, if that found its way into your film as well, because I feel like your film is also very aesthetically daring and free-spirited and dares to combine all of these aesthetics and have this open mind. So do you try to take the Greg Araki philosophy and apply it to your own filmmaking as well?
Yeah, I was. And I was trying to quote different artists that inspired me and Kimi as we were growing up. So it's also a photographer, David LaChapelle. And some books, of course, it's Trainspotting by Henry Walsh. And Harmony Korine's films, lots of music. Since, you know, it's a story about us growing up, it made sense to quote and to cite those artists.
And it's also such a, because it's a story of our generation in some sense, it's also so funny to see this progression in aesthetics. Like, you know, at the beginning, you're Nirvana obsessed, and then it's like Joy Division, but slowly, like, these witch house influences come in, and all these kind of like more niche online electronic clubby moody things. It was very recognizable for me in some ways because I followed a similar musical pattern, so it was so fun. It was very fun and kind of interesting to see this progression through all of these musical styles and aesthetics.
Yeah, and sometimes people ask me about, you know what cameras I'm using, because in the film it looks I sometimes joke that it's a film about me getting eventually better camera.
Yeah, there's like this moment as well when you get a new camera and somebody comments on like, oh, the picture is very like crisp.
Oh yeah, that's Kimi. And actually, when you're looking at it now, it, you know, it doesn't look as great. But I remember at that time it looked amazing. Such a good quality, we thought.
I can imagine. Well, I'm kind of wondering, because arguably you could say this is a film that's over a decade in the making, right? This is a film that's a long time. You've lived it for a very long time and then you had to make it. And as it's so close to you, I'm wondering how you think this will shape you as a filmmaker as well. And because, you know, now you made this film and you have made this maybe living memory of Kimi. Yeah, what kind of impact has that on the other stories that you're interested in telling now that this story is told?
I personally really like personal art, so not necessarily where I'm one of the characters. I would like to continue making films that are personal. Yeah, but not necessarily with the archives, like that's one, because I get bored of trying the same thing. Yeah, we'll see.
And how do you, I mean, this is a hard question maybe, but how do you kind of relate this film with what is happening now in Russia? Because I feel that in many ways this film is already, in the film you can feel that things are slowly turning amiss, you know, that things are getting gradually worse, that this generation is a bit more adrift. And I think that a lot of the things that were often left unsaid or were like simmering under the surface are now just very much over the surface and very explicitly out there. Do you think in some strange way that is a good thing maybe also for a new generation? Or like, I'm just kind of trying to figure out, isn't it in some strange ways better that we at least, everybody knows where Russia is standing now, including the people within the country? Or how do you kind of look at those developments? Maybe also from the perspective of a new generation that has to find out how to live in that system.
That's a difficult question because, of course, Russia now is a different country from what we see in the film. It's much more repressive. Everything changed so much since you know, full-scale war started. So it's, it's a different place where life is, you know, it's difficult. Yeah, but you could see in the film where it's all heading, unfortunately. There's a part in the film when Putin just becomes president.
Yeah.
And he talks about something about freedom of press and how human rights are important to us. And my God, it sounds like, funny. Like, what are you talking about?
It is almost funny, except for the fact that it's, of course, also very depressive.
Yeah. Funny in a very depressive way.
Yeah. But I think that this film, in some strange way, perfectly captures that some of the most depressive things in life can also be a source of humor and can be funny.
Yeah. Life is very absurd.
I have maybe a couple of final questions, and they have to do maybe a little bit with a personal reaction to the film as well. Have many people that are close to Kimi also seen the film, and maybe what kind of conversations did you have with them to make this film also do justice to his memory?
I had an amazing screening to, you know, all of our common friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really nice to, you know, relive some of the moments together. And it was very also bittersweet to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And Kimi's mom hasn't seen the film, and she said it's really difficult emotionally to watch it. And I completely understand and I respect that. And Kimi's brother watched the film and he loved it, and he's actually doing really good now.
Nice. That's
a spoiler.
For the people that are seeing the film, it's good news to hear that. He's a very endearing person as well. You do grow very fond of him whenever you see him.
Yeah. But of course I felt the responsibility because I had to portray Kimi and he didn't have, you know, he couldn't say anything. So I was trying to make the audience look at him with my eyes, you know, someone I loved very much. So,
And well, maybe as a final question, because at the beginning, you know, you told a little bit about what it was like to go back to this footage and that was also quite bittersweet, but maybe was also good for the process of grief. How do you compare that beginning maybe now to the end? The film is done, it's been released, and people talk about it, you're talking about it now. Does it feel like that maybe put you in a different stage of grief and acceptance maybe? Did you travel along with that together with your film?
You know what really like helps me is that a lot of people who watch the film, they come to me afterwards and they say that they went through something similar, or their friends went through something similar, and now they understand them better.
Mm-hmm.
Or my film helped them to deal with some, you know, rough things in their life. And it feels really, you know, heartwarming that my film helps somebody too.
That it's a comforting film as well.
Yeah, it's not only my, like, self-therapy. It's also helping other people. And, I'm glad that it does something for other people.
It really does. I think it's a very beautiful film and a testament of human love and kindness. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. How to Save a Dead Friend is being released in the Dutch cinemas at the 7th of September. Run, don't walk to see it, because it's a beautiful documentary. And thank you so much, Manisha, for being here. It was a pleasure.
You.